directional images appeared, generated by powerful projection apparatus in the Voice of Evening shuttle. Above Sukhothai Sanikiluak, Chinese dragons as large as mountains fought epic battles. Sea monsters convulsed and writhed in the night. Celestial citadels burned. Hosts of purple-winged, fiery angels fell from the heavens in tightly knit squadrons, clutching arcane instruments of music or punishment. A marbled giant rose from the sea, as if woken from some eons-long slumber. It was very, very impressive.
"Bastards," Tonburi muttered.
"Sir?"
"Bastards," he said, louder this time. "We know they're better than us, but do they have to keep reminding us?"
He ushered her into the reception chamber where the Vahishta visitors were being entertained. The return indoors had a magical sharpening effect on his senses. Naki suspected that the ability to turn drunkenness on and off like a switch must be one of the most hallowed of diplomatic skills. He leaned toward her confidentially.
"Did Jota mention any
security considerations, Chairman?"
"Yes, I think I got the message."
"It's probably nothing, only..."
"I understand.
Better safe than sorry." He winked, touching a finger against the side of his nose.
"Precisely."
The interior was bright after the balcony. 20 Vahishta delegates were standing in a huddle near the middle of the room. The captain was absent. Little had been seen of Moreau since the shuttle's arrival in Umingmaktok, but the delegates were talking to a clutch of local bigwigs, none of whom Naki recognized. Tonburi steered her into the fray, oblivious to the conversations that were taking place.
"Ladies and gentlemen, might I introduce Naki Okpik? Naki oversees the scientific program on the moat. She'll be your host for the visit to our project."
"Ah, Naki."
Amisha Crane leaned over and shook her hand.
"A pleasure. I just read your papers on information propagation methods in Class 3 nodes. Erudite."
"They were collaborative works," Naki said. "I really can't take too much credit."
"Ah, but you can. All of you can. You achieved those findings with the minimum of resources, and you made very creative use of some extremely simplistic numerical methods."
"We muddled through," Naki said. Crane nodded enthusiastically.
"It must give you a great sense of satisfaction."
Tak Tonburi said, "It's a philosophy, that's all. We conduct our science in isolation, and we enjoy only limited communication with other colonies. As a social model, it has its disadvantages, but it means we aren't forever jealous of what they're achieving on some other world that happens to be a few decades ahead of us because of an accident of history or location. We think that the benefits outweigh the costs."
"Well, it seems to work," Crane said. "You have a remarkably stable society here, Chairman.
Verging on the utopian, some might say."
Tak Tonburi caressed his cowlick.
"We can't complain."
"Nor can we," said the man Naki recognized as quizzical-faced Simon Matsubara. "If you hadn't enforced this isolation, your own juggler research would have been as hopelessly compromised as everywhere else."
"But the isolation isn't absolute, is it?"
The voice was quiet but commanding. Naki followed the voice to the speaker. It was Raphael Weir, the man who had been identified as a possible security risk. Of the three who had emerged from Moreau's shuttle, he was the least remarkable-looking, possessing the kind of amorphous face that would allow him to blend in with almost any crowd. Had her attention not been drawn to him, he would have been the last one she noticed. He was not unattractive, but there was nothing particularly striking or charismatic about his looks. According to the security dossier, he had made a number of efforts to break away from the main party of the delegation while they had been visiting research stations. They could have been accidents. One or two other party members had become separated at other times, but it was beginning to look a little too deliberate.
"No," Tak Tonburi answered. "We're not absolute isolationists, or we'd never have given permission for the Voice of Evening to assume orbit around Turquoise. But we don't solicit passing traffic either. Our welcome is as warm as anyone's, we hope, but we don't encourage visitors." Are we the first to visit since your settlement? Weir asked.
The first starship? Taktonburi shook his head.
No, but it's been a number of years since the last one.
Which was?
The Pelican in Impiety, a century ago.
An amusing coincidence, then, Weir said.
Taktonburi narrowed his eyes.
Coincidence? The Pelican's next port of call was Haven, if I'm not mistaken. It was en route from Zion, but it made a trade stopover around Turquoise.
He smiled. And we have come from Haven, so history already binds our two worlds, albeit tenuously.
Tonburi's eyes narrowed. He was trying to read Weir and evidently failing.
We don't talk about the Pelican too much. There were technical benefits, vacuum bladder production methods, information technologies. But there was also a fair bit of unpleasantness. The wounds haven't entirely healed.
Let's hope this visit will be remembered more fondly, Weir said.
Amicia Crane nodded, fingering one of the items of silver jewelry in her hair.
Agreed. All the indications are favorable, at the very least. We've arrived at a most auspicious time.
She turned to Naki.
I find the moat project fascinating, and I'm sure I speak for the entire Vahishta delegation. I may as well tell you that no one else has attempted anything remotely like it. Tell me, scientist to scientist, do you honestly think it will work?
We won't know until we try, Naki said. Any other answer would have been politically hazardous. Too much optimism and the politicians would have started asking just why the expensive project was needed in the first place. Too much pessimism and they would ask exactly the same question.
Fascinating all the same. Crane's expression was knowing, as if she understood Naki's predicament perfectly. I understand that you're very close to running the first experiment.
Given that it's taken us 20 years to get this far, yes, we're close. But we're still looking at 3 to 4 months, maybe longer. It's not something we want to rush.
That's a great pity, Crane said, turning now to Tonburi. In 3 to 4 months we might be on our way. Still, it would have been something to see, wouldn't it?
Tonburi leaned toward Naki. The alcohol in his breath was a fog of cheap vinegar.
I suppose there wouldn't be any chance of accelerating the schedule, would there?
Out of the question, I'm afraid, Naki said. That's just too bad, said Amicia Crane. Still toying with her jewelry, she turned to the others.
But we mustn't let a little detail like that spoil our visit, must we?
They returned to the moat using the Voice of Evening's shuttle. There was another civic reception to be endured upon arrival, but it was a much smaller affair than the one in Sukhothai Sanikiluak. Dr. Jota Sivaraksa was there, of course, and once Naki had dealt with the business of introducing the party to him, she was able to relax for the first time in many hours, melting into the corner of the room and watching the interaction between visitors and locals with a welcome sense of detachment. Naki was tired and had difficulty keeping her eyes open. She saw everything through a sleepy blur, the delegates surrounding Sivaraksa like pillars of fire, the fabric of their costumes rippling with the slightest movement, reds and russets and chrome yellows dancing like sparks or sheets of flame. Naki left as soon as it was polite to do so, and when she reached her bed she fell immediately into troubled sleep, dreaming of squadrons of purple-winged angels falling from the skies and of the great giant rising from the depths, clawing the seaweed and kelp of ages from his eyes. In the morning she awoke without really feeling refreshed. Anemic light pierced the slats on her window. She was not due to meet the delegates again for another 3 or 4 hours, so there was time to turn over and try and catch some proper sleep. But she knew from experience that it would be futile. She got up. To her surprise, there was a new message on her console from Jota Sivaraksa. What, she wondered, did he have to say to her that he could not have said at the reception, or later this morning? She opened the message and read.
Sivaraksa, she said to herself. Are you insane? It can't be done.
The message informed her that there had been a change of plan. The first closure of the sea doors would be attempted in 2 days, while the delegates were still on the